Balcone's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Welcome to another episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. I am your host and guru, Christopher Hart. Hi, everybody. This week was great. I get to sit down with fifth generation president and managing director of Old Forester, Campbell Brown. Not a sales rep. Not that there's anything wrong with being a sales rep, but the guy in charge. So it was awesome getting to sit down with him, and we walk through the Whiskey Row series, all of the great decisions that Old Forester has been making the past couple of years. I mean, lots of brands have screwed up the last couple of years, making horrible mistakes. Some have even had to go back on, almost as if, very similar to the new Sonic the Hedgehog movie. People realize this was a bad idea, and they have to backtrack and start over. So, the one brand that's saved from that is the entire Brown-Forman portfolio, whether it's Jack Daniel's, whether it's Old Forester. They are all just knocking it out of the park. So this week I am joined by Campbell Brown, president and managing director of Old Forester. And yeah, we sit down, we talk a little bit about what's to come, the new cask strength single barrels, and maybe some hints at some other single barrel programs that are coming down the pipeline. So things to come. So this week's show is, as always, sponsored by Terlato Distillery Artisan Spirits, leader in premium artisan products like Boonehaven, Deanston, Lecheg, Tobermory, Baines, Black Bottle, and of course Scottish Leader. You pick up the entire line at your local liquor store, or if you are a retailer, reach out to your United Wine and Spirits rep. Whiskey Neat is also supported by the Inspired Spirits at Glass, Rev Imports, and Amroot Distilleries. Amroot crafts one of the most award-winning Indian single malts to date, and they do it to the exact same standards as Scotch. Amroot Fusion also received the Double Gold Blind and scored a jaw-dropping 96 points by judges at the Proof Awards. Amroot single malt whiskey is widely available across America and can be found everywhere. Everywhere in Texas. Everyone loves Amroot. I had this initial note that I was going to say, for the first time in nearly 100 years, a member of the Brown family will take the reins of Old Forester. This was a caption for an article in 2015 about Campbell taking over Old Forester, the brand from his fifth generation brand of his family from many, many moons ago. So he took over the same year that they launched Whiskey Row, the Louisville distillery of Old Forester. And yeah, so one of his first tasks would be to continue the momentum with a brand that is killing it, with brands like the 1910, the 1920, the new 100 Proof Rye. I mean, great decisions. Great decisions. So without further ado, Campbell Brown of Old Forester. Cheers. Campbell.
Hi.
Thank you so much.
Good to be here.
Very nice to meet you. Yeah. This is a big deal. Campbell Brown. I mean, for a 150-year-old company, you guys are, fifth generation?
Fifth generation, yep.
Yeah, yep. President and Managing Director of Brown Forman.
Old Forester.
Old Forester. Sorry, let's do that again.
My brother would be upset.
You guys have been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
We've talked. I've kind of ranted and raved about a couple in this particular lineup. I've talked a lot about the rye. It's a big part of some of the stuff we do at the Whiskey Social, our festival.
Right.
Of course, 1910, 1920. I mean,
yeah.
We had Matt Raywalt, which is a professional wrestler, WWE.
Oh,
right?
Cool. What's his name?
His name is Matt Raywalt. He goes by Aiden English, but he's a very well known wrestler who's jumped into this hobby, and I had him on my show last April or something, And we talked specifically about 1910. We couldn't stop.
Oh, really?
We couldn't. It's just such an interesting idea. I mean, just so smoky and extra charred. I mean, everything about it, I love. He wasn't sure what to think of it when he first tried it. But I've talked repeatedly that I think every decision over the past, it feels like 3 or 4 years, has been genius as a company. And I mean that.
Yeah.
I have no reason to blow you up here.
Right.
Thank
you.
I'm just, everything has been.
I just hope the right people are listening to this.
Well, you cover the gamut here of available bourbons.
Right.
I can't talk today. The rye is fantastic. I mean, this right here, 100 proof for about $20 here in Houston is just insane, right? 1910, 1920, can't go wrong. And now, with recent news, you guys have expanded your barrel program to include the barrel
Very
strength.
Very exciting,
stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, what can you do no wrong?
Oh, no, we can, and we have. But I think it's interesting. I think one of the reasons we're just reacting and listening pretty well, you know, because there's so many more people today that are interested in the category in bourbon and that have opinions and that have a platform, you know, to talk about it. You can interact with people today way differently than when I started in this business, you know, in like the mid 90s. And so I think, you know, I work with Jackie Zycan, who's our master taster. She's got her ear very well loved.
Yeah, great. Yeah, and she's doing fantastic things in the realm of social media.
Yeah, and she's got her ear close to the ground, and she's a wonderful resource and kind of keeps us pointed in the right direction. So there's a lot of, I think, things that are influencing some of the decision making. Ultimately, though, it's like, can you pull the trigger? And I think one of the things that we benefit from is that while Old Forester is a fairly small brand in the grand scheme of what Brown-Forman does, we do have Brown-Forman. And Brown-Forman allows us, enables us, and supports us in doing some things that might be considered risky, like opening a $50 million distillery, right?
In Louisville.
That for a brand of its size, you just wouldn't kind of put that kind of capital in there. But, you know, again, you have this wonderful kind of resource in the parent company. And supporting a brand that they've actually allowed us to go be a little bit more experimental and explore and be a little bit more nimble, I think, in
sure.
how we do things. And so I think it all comes together and has made some of this stuff possible for sure.
I've talked specifically on the show quite a bit about how it's been a bit jarring for some brands. Bit of a headache, bit of a these things, having this new era of complete integration of feedback at every tier.
Right.
The Facebook world, your Instagram world, it's the first time ever that all three or four tiers, depending on how you want to look about it, have all been able to see, you know, used to have to pay companies for market research.
Right.
And really now all you need now is someone who's so well respected and loved, like Jackie, to post on social media that something's coming out for the entire bourbon world to freak out.
Right.
So when she posted the bottle on the floor on that carpet, it broke the internet. I am curious. Is it something like that planned? Does she like?
Oh, hey. God. I mean, you can't plan anything for her. I mean, Jackie is not plannable.
Sure.
She's pretty, she's got a long... look, she's very spontaneous. I think she's very thoughtful as it relates to our portfolio and her role and, you know, the importance of barrel selection and things of that nature. But getting any semblance of control or predictability around her social media posting is a pipe dream.
Well, and I've also said that I think we are in the age of yes. For so long, so many distilleries were just not willing to break out of the mold to do more other than what they knew would work. It's too big of a risk, right? Especially
totally.
At the scale
Completely.
Of what it is. And what we are seeing now is probably the most fun to be in this hobby. And to be in this business.
Yeah. Part of it is because there's so many other folks out there doing it, right? Like everybody asks about, what do you think of all these emerging distilleries and these boutique distilleries and, you know, breweries and whatnot. And I've, you know, I truly believe it's been a wonderful thing for the entire industry because of their ability to pivot and experiment and to push boundaries. It's opened up, you know, the possibility for more established companies to do the same. I mean, wonderful example is the, you know, as we kind of open up our by the barrel program to include these unfiltered barrel proof barrels, that was something that we just, you know, I think most, or at least our company would have been heavily debated, and it has been heavily debated because not a lot of people are familiar with what an unfiltered bourbon looks like in a bottle.
Yeah.
And when you're used to selling products that need to look a very particular way and make them available to a lot of consumers, the idea of having impurities in there or things that might be floating or that you can actually see.
Perceived impurities. Yeah, they're not impurities. They're beautiful, beautiful tea leaves.
They're little delicious pieces of love. But to have these things in there, it goes against, you know,
aesthetics,
and it goes against what risk management would tell you to do.
Sure.
But the fact is that the palate of people today has evolved so dramatically, and there's such interest around the purest form of the products that we bottle. It's almost come full circle, you know, where people, if you could put a straw in a barrel and let somebody drink from it, they would do that.
They would go crazy to do it. Yeah. I mean, that's what distillery visits are. When they roll out a barrel and you get to sample it straight from the barrel, there's this. Your audience now is a bit more educated than it used to be. And to know that what you're looking at is a pure raw form product. I mean, one of, I don't know if this has ever come up in those meetings, but one of the most successful independent bottlers that independents, a whole line called Raw Cask.
Right.
Is Blackadder. Right. Blackadder will do a raw cask series where you literally the entire bottle is full of maybe 2 full tablespoons of char.
Oh, yeah.
I'll send a
pull
picture
one of to, those out. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll send a picture to Jack to throw up, but this is what it looks like here. I mean, it's insane. And I'll show you too. It goes against all what you would think would be your number one concern, and that's people, you know, rejecting stores sending back product. But I think we are now in an era where we can do something like this and it be received the right way, which is the right way, like to love it and to embrace it. So, well, let's jump into this.
Okay.
I want a pour of something. I will tell you this. I know that I've had this bonded bourbon. The 100 proof bourbon, the Old Forester line. I know I've had it in a cocktail.
Right.
I don't know that I've ever had it straight. I've had this straight and I've loved it straight. I've raved about the rye.
Rye. Yeah.
But I can I do
you
Oh
yeah,
open?
Please. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Knock yourself out.
All right. I'm sure this is
entertaining. This is great because you know.
How long have you been
tough day of traveling. It's nice to be able to sit down and unwind with a little bit of 100 proof. I'm in town. I'm here just through tonight and then off down to your Austin, Texas.
All right. I apologize.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I throw a lot of shade at
the
them.
This is a good state for your own Forester.
Oh. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, so this is like the one, right, where before we did the Whiskey Row and everything, you know, 100 proof, certainly in Louisville, was one that the locals kind of tip their hat to.
Sure.
And you find it on all the back bars. Obviously, 86 proof is very widely available, but this seems to be the one that kept the whole brand on the map for its darkest times.
So I'm sure nothing can be announced if it hasn't come to fruition, but I'm asking.
Don't ask
about intention. No. About intention.
No,
so the Bill Samuels family, the Maker's Mark family, each generation has wanted their own fingerprint on the brand.
Yeah.
Is there something in particular that you've wanted to that you want to do down line that you have the wheels turning? I mean, do you have a vision for what's next?
I mean, look, I think the brand has been. You know, as we tell everybody, it's, you know, been on the shelves available for 150 years through thick and thin. And
for sealed bottles too, right?
Yeah. Always in a bottle. And so, you know, I wouldn't want to influence it, you know, with a particular personal style. You know, there's just too much history there. And
sure.
I think it's much more fun for us to go and look at the brand's history and styles and the way it's evolved and changed, or the industry's evolved and changed, and to try and kind of come up with a way to salute those moments. Then I don't, you know, hopefully I wouldn't be surprised if there were to be down the road potentially a whiskey row that would tip its hat to
the Brown family.
Well, no, to the distillery that we built downtown.
Oh, in Louisville.
Right?
Yeah.
And so,
great facility, by the way.
Thank
Gorgeous.
You. Yeah.
That open.
The atrium?
Yeah, that atrium where the still is pretty insane.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think it'll always be, you know, the little stylistic pieces of this will hopefully come from people that know more about whiskey than I do, right? Like the distillers and Jackie
sure.
and stuff. And then also more about kind of the time or the moment or the styles. And I think that's where we've been having so much fun with this brand is being able to lean into some of that.
Man, we did a show earlier. Then I had to go down to Deer Park. Their Rotary City Council meeting thing, and we did a little whiskey tasting, and then back this way. And it's been a long day.
Yeah.
It's been a long day. I can't imagine what it is. You talk to someone like Bernie Lubbers or, Fred Noe, and of course yourself, they're just running you ragged for how many weeks in a row before you get a chance to breathe again.
It comes in ebbs and flows, and that's why it's nice to have, you know, a good complement of people that can go do this as well. You know, Jackie's obviously really under a lot of, we move her around quite a bit, and most of the stuff I do, it's really popped up recently because we're getting ready to celebrate the company and the brand's 150th anniversary, and so there has been more, opportunities to kind of get in front of some bigger audiences or talk to some folks that
like myself,
in media,
yeah.
like important yeah, people yeah. in media.
Important
and
people in media, guys. You hear
yes,
that?
Yes, very.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's fun. You know, it's nice to be able to talk a little bit about, you know, the specialness of that kind of anniversary with people that, you know, have a real interest and curiosity in either American businesses or in, you know, these wonderful kind of American bourbon stories.
Pieces of history.
I mean,
You said 150 years.
And you get
years.
To do it around a nice tasting and a sampling from here and there. It makes the afternoon a little bit more respectable.
A little bit easier.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah. So let's talk about the rye. So now when this rye came out, I want to say it was 2 years ago. Was it two?
It's just in a year now.
Really? It's only been a year?
Yeah.
I've raved about this thing.
Well, what the biggest market in the U.S. is for rye? I just saw this today.
Let me guess. In the U.S. for rye, I'm going to say...
For this rye.
Oh, this particular rye. I'm going to say New York.
Texas.
Really?
Yeah.
Just number one here. Well, it's done very well
bigger
here.
Bigger than Kentucky.
Oh, really? Well, listen.
I mean...
When people are looking at the top three markets, period, for whiskey, I've always said that. I think...
It's always California, Texas, and Florida.
Well, and New York, too. New York is a big market for a lot of whiskey. So I've always said that it's amazing to me how loud the voice is from Kentucky. It feels much cozier, much smaller when I'm there. But the voice, the whole world is listening to you guys, right? You as a whole.
And this brand is, always... I mean, the one thing that, even through the very skinny years of Old Forester, it was well available in Kentucky. And so it's always had a bit of a bigger base of business that we've been able to grow off of. And so I do find it amazing that, rye came out the same time for everybody. And here we are. Houston and Texas, it's the number one. I think Houston's the number one within Texas. I don't know if I'm allowed to say all that stuff.
But. Yeah, well, no, it's this is something, but, again, we're in that era of things are much more available.
Right.
Yeah, Texas does really well. In particular, it's this is where I talked a little bit to you about the genius of what's going on with Brown-Forman as a whole and all of their decisions, and of course, Old Forester. You are talking about a perfect rye for both the drinker, the consumer, and of course, historically one of the most vitally important parts of building a brand is the bar. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So you've got that, and for the bar, it's probably closer to $17 a bottle or something like that, $18 a bottle. But you're talking about 100 proof rye. That's great to drink on its own, as well as perfect for a cocktail. It's the perfect marriage of both your focus audiences.
Yeah,
right?
You know? Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about, so people may not notice this, because there tends to be a lot going on an Old Forester label.
Right.
Talk to us about what most may not have noticed, and that is that there is no E in whiskey.
Yeah, there is no E in whiskey.
There's very few American distillers.
Right.
Maker's Mark, Old Forester.
So the basically, and I don't, like, everybody's like, why do you guys do it differently?
No, that's awesome. You should. All of our regulations are without the E.
Right.
All of them. And people like to say, well, in America, it has to have an E. Well, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's stupid.
Right.
It's a complete matter of preference.
Yeah. And so, you know, and I think it just goes back to the origins of the family and George Garvin Brown and his where he came from. And they didn't spell it with an E. And so it's not on our label. And it seems to have stuck.
Sure.
Unlike the two R's that we had on Old Forester when it first came out, where one of those fell away.
Fell away.
Yeah.
Do you remember the reason for that?
Well, that was because it was Old Forester was named after a doctor in Kentucky, in Louisville, a friend of George's that was quite successful and had a big practice and was well-regarded. And George felt that if he could align his bottled product with a reputable name, that he would have a better chance of selling more of his product, which he was able to do. And then when Dr. Forester passed away, they dropped the R and just went to what it is today.
Just a singular one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is just...
Yeah, that's good.
Crazy value.
Yeah, and so that's another Jackie, right, where she came up with, you know, we asked her because we were aware that the, you know, rye in particular was resonating with bartenders. Our 100-proof bourbon product had really been kind of elevated by the bartender community, and we wanted Jackie to have a big influence on what this rye would look like, and not just taste like, but, like, help us with the positioning of it and for the consumer. And so she kind of, look, this is all about the bar and the bartender. I want to make a great rye that can be a wonderful base in all the cocktails. We've already got that in 100 proof, but let's do the rye that way. And so, and then she's like, I don't want to line price it with 100 proof. I'm like, yeah, you don't get to do pricing. That's where we draw the line. So,
sure.
No. It's got to be like, don't overcomplicate this. You know,
sure.
Don't try to make up for the cost of goods, whatever it is. You got to line price it with 100 proof. That will make a huge difference. It'll be received better, and it's the right thing to do.
Sure.
And so we ended up going and doing that, and it did. It made a huge difference. Obviously, the product's good. I think because, you know, one of the reasons is the mash bill is pretty unique. It's, you know, 65% rye, which is nice, but it's got this 20% of malted barley and then the 15 corn. And so a lot of malted barley in there, from the way she talks about it, has really brought some balance and some uniqueness to our flavor profile, which sets it apart from some of the other ryes out there. I know it's not like a high rye.
Sure.
But I think, you know, having that much malted barley in there does give it a little bit of a zing that some other ryes may not have as much of.
Well, it's like, as I've said many times, it kind of reminds me of, there are two ryes now, particularly in market, that I think are really, really special, that aren't talked about enough. No, there's three, really. I think Wild Turkey does great with their rye.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt. It's just not widely available. This rye is bloody fantastic. And, of course, Jack Daniel's rye. I think there's this sweeter side of rye. I think we are, for a while now, the rye market has been kind of quartered with what we expect from Canada.
Yeah.
The whistle pigs that are really bright and kind of hay,
Right.
There's a particular note that you get. This sweeter, darker side of rye is such a fun,
right,
flexible spirit,
yeah,
like you said, cocktail-wise.
Yeah.
Very, very happy with this. And of course, like I said, 100 proof, 20 bucks.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, what's there to complain about?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize Jackie pioneered so much of that.
Yeah. No, she did great. I mean, we've had the recipe, right? It was one of these brands that we had mothballed when we bought Early Times coming out of Prohibition. And Chris discovered it. And so we used that mash bill to make the Old Forester rye, and then it was just kind of working through landing on the right proof and
sure. I think that was a smart call. Have you noticed? And this is just me kind of gauging. And if you can't answer, we'll cut it out. Have you noticed a difference in the success of launching these products based off starting proof being a major factor? Meaning, so when the first iterations of the
Whiskey Row
series came out, I didn't quite hear a lot, but then as you started going, I don't know if it was just the difference in product, the aging, of course, I think a proof made a factor, of course, in the the 1920.
Yeah.
But this in particular, your inexpensive, very approachable rye at 100 proof.
Right.
This, to me, and you would know, to me, this has been a massive success.
Yeah. It's almost too good.
I don't know, and it's super available, right? That's what's so great. We bought quite a bit of it for the Whiskey Social.
Good, keep it.
But I don't, I just was curious. Yeah. Like, I don't, at 90 proof, I don't know that it would have the same splash that it had. I think this really excelled exactly as is the way that it is. Does that make sense?
Right.
I think if it had been different, it wouldn't be the same.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And that's, I mean, that was, you know, we really didn't have a master plan going in here that it was going to be 100, you know, it was going to be this or that. It was really kind of sitting down, working with Jackie, her recognizing that 100 proof, our 100 proof bourbon was so perfect in the way it's settled into cocktails and how bartenders used it that, you know, we were. This was kind of a start. Now they proofed it at a bunch of different places.
Sure,
we landed here without
master taster without, for a reason.
Yeah.
She knows what she's doing. Man, I can't wait to meet her. We're friends on Facebook.
Yeah,
and I know she's great. I know she's busy, but I'll eventually meet her. So yes, can I get enough? And for those listening that are curious, both the 100 proof bourbon and the 100 proof rye are quite widely available and very, very approachable. So if you're looking to get into drinking spirits neat or just want something for a great base cocktail. Literally, you can't go wrong with Old Forester. I've raved about the early times 1 liter. I've raved about just
that bottle and bond.
Yes,
yeah, that is good. That surprised me.
Oh,
I'll be honest.
Again, just that. I think the great starting point for so many is you guys. Just everyone's hitting out of the park right now. I'm in an age in which we are so. You know, everyone's trying to hunt down the old stuff.
Right.
When you do see the new stuff come out and it's exceptional, you couldn't be happier, you know?
Great. That's good to hear. Yeah.
So,
thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. Moving on. All right. So give us the talk about the 1870 original batch.
Okay. So this was the first of the Whiskey Rows. And so this is, as I said, kind of we lean into our timeline to drive some of the innovation that we're doing. And this is our effort at basically recreating or trying to deliver a version of what George would have been bottling back in the day when first starting. So,
Do you guys know the original proof of what he was?
Yeah, it was 90 proof.
90 proof?
That's
interesting.
Yeah, so that's why we went to single barrel 90 proof, and this is why this is fantastic. 90 proof. And so what we did know is that he wasn't a distiller from day one. He was actually a rectifier. And he wanted, you know, he was pretty disappointed with the inconsistencies of bourbon and being a pharmaceutical salesperson, not having consistent product was a, you know, that's a fatal flaw when you're trying to sell stuff to doctors and patients. So he enlisted some friends to help him secure barrels. And so he originally selected, there were three distilleries. I think it was Atherton, Melwood, and Mattingly within kind of that Louisville area that supplied him with product, which he then blended himself and proofed it to 90, bottled it as Old Forester, and voila, that's how he first brought the product to market. And so when we launched Whiskey Row, I'll be honest, I was on the sales side. I was in a sales meeting talking about Old Forester, and they flashed this thing up on the screen for like a minute and said, okay, so we're going to come out with this in 2 years, and boom, next slide. I'm like,
sure.
What was that?
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, we're going to do this. We're going to introduce a premium version of Old Forester. We're going to mimic the way George Garvin Brown made it. And it's like, what is it? why is it too, what, can I have it now? Like, that like was the first great idea I had seen on Old Forester in since birthday time, bourbon, yeah. Really, you know? It was like,
can't go wrong there, yeah.
Yeah, it was like genius. And so I got into the job just as we launched this stuff, so it really worked out well for me too. But I had nothing to do with it, and it's a really a fun way in which we basically selected, I think the first batch was 21 barrels. We picked 7 barrels from 3 different warehouses that were put into barrels on different days and tried to kind of mix it up as much as possible, sure, in terms of where they were, lightly filter these things and then blend them, proofed it down to 90, which was his original proof, put it in the bottle, and voila, there you go. The version of his original one.
1870. What, and I asked this question of Bill Lumsden's protege, and I'm going to ask you the same question.
Okay.
Do you, when you have new stuff coming out, do you set aside a couple bottles for your collection? Is there a whole flight of birthdays bourbon sitting at your house?
No, God, no. I wish. I mean, I'm just not that organized and not that disciplined, you know,
sure.
So if it gets in my house, it's going to get consumed.
Yeah.
What I've started to do is, like, Jackie gives me, you know, when we do the President's Choice stuff, Jackie will kind of dumb it down a little bit so that we've got I can't make a bad decision when I'm selecting these barrels, the President's Choice barrels. And so we'll get she'll narrow it down to maybe 15 or so, 20 barrels at 2 different proofs.
And make it super easy for you. Yeah.
Well, just, you know, like, she's the pro. And,
sure.
And so you really want, you don't want to dismiss that just to create, you know, I want her really getting the best barrels so that at least I know that I'm not going to make an ass out of myself.
Sure, sure.
So
that
she.
People are going to like whatever's picked.
I mean, right. It's great. And so, but I get these, I guess she gives me this great little box of samples and 375 things to take home, and I spent a few days sampling those, and I've stopped giving them back every year. Like, I just hold on to
collecting
those.
Them, yeah.
I was like, here are the numbers, here are the ones that I really liked, and then you know, we'll talk a little bit about them and what proofs, and then
I was obsessed.
But I like to keep
that.
Those.
When I first got into bourbon, I was obsessed with saving the samples.
Yeah,
you get a barrel selection, or Knob Creek sends you those little couple 100-milliliter bottles. Or if I would be somewhere and let's just say someone else, you know, there were many things you'd get invited to and you'd go to, and somebody would have just a little 100-milliliter. And so I've got this archive of samples I've saved over the years,
yeah,
that is in no particular order. Everything's labeled. But it was my favorite part about this hobby when I first got into it, was just the idea of these little special moments in time.
I mean, the look on your friend's face when you pull something out and you're like, hey, do you want to try this?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what is it? I was like, it's just a game. It's just what I put my 100 proof in.
Sure,
you know, but
sure.
No, but it really, it'll be something, you know, pretty special. And I'm like, yeah, what is it? I'm like, well, this is the batch from 2 years ago when we were trying to select President's Choice. Like, I do want to try that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
and,
yeah, they're,
and it
they're
was
fun to
and
have
it
around.
Was the origin of that, right?
Yeah.
So they're not getting a retail bottle.
No,
they're getting
like
Yeah,
it's been, you know, yeah, it's usually between 125 and 115 proof, those samples.
Oh,
so,
that's beautiful.
Yeah.
God, I'm jealous. All right, so
yep.
Very approachable, very, very approachable.
Yep.
And then you've got 1897, 27
right.
years later. Bald and
Bond.
And
today was yesterday Bald and Bond Day? Was that what I was seeing on social media?
You know, it might have been.
I used to care. Yeah,
yeah, there was Prohibition. I'll give that a shout out in December.
Repeal Day.
Yep. Yeah.
Cheers
Repeal
to that.
Day. Absolutely. Cheers to that. Bald and Bond 1897. This was the first 100 proof iteration.
So this, you can imagine, like, the Bald and Bond Act comes out, and like, George is already like well ahead of the curve. You know, he's like, look, guys, let's be honest. I mean, I'm doing all this plus. You know, all my stuff's bottled. It's all made now the same place. It's, you know, now you're going to make me drop it all to 90 proof. I got to go from 100 proof to, I mean, I got to 90 proof up to 100 proof. And so I don't think he was thrilled with the Bald and Bond. I mean, most people weren't. But, you know, here was a guy that was already kind of going the extra mile trying to make sure that the product that he was selling to consumers wasn't going to kill them or make them sick. And now he's got to kind of move all this stuff to, you know, get away from that.
Sure.
So, but I mean, good thing for us, because the Old Forester Bottled and Bond became kind of the flagship brand for many, many years, and was made its way all over Asia and everywhere else. You see it everywhere today, and it's a fun
yeah, even fun brand. Last year I found some old dusty Old Forester from the 90s in a liquor store. They're still out there. You still, yeah, every once in a while, there's two that are probably the most common. That's the old charter ones, you know, with the
right
clock and the, you know.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, you still find an old bottling of Old Forester. Oh,
it's funny. My neighbor, we were over at their house before Christmas, and they usually get some stuff for my kids and little, you know, like knickknacks. And she came in one day and she's like, "I found this in my attic."
Oh Lord!
And she opens up this box, and in the box is a whatever, like a 500 ml of Old Forester with a prescription on it in the in the paper box that it came in, that was a prohibition
medicinal
era,
pint,
medicinal,
yeah,
pint of Old Forester, and you could see the person's name on it, like,
Lord,
no more than 5 ounces, and that seems like a lot.
Yeah,
cold.
You know, it's funny. So we found a beautiful bottle of ginger brandy from 1914, and opened it at the Whiskey Social. It was strictly medicinal.
Yeah.
Everything on the label was to cure diarrhea.
So you opened it.
Yeah. It was to cure diarrhea, to deal colic, cure colic, right?
And so many diarrhea problems. Back
then. Yeah. And the prescription on the glass, the bottle, the label says a wine glass full.
Oh yeah. And, yes, it does.
I mean, that's a lot. Good 6 to 8
right
ounces of ginger brandy. It was.
Do you remember what proof that was?
So. I don't, and I'll tell you what, regardless of what the label, I got a picture of it.
Yeah.
Regardless of what the label said, the proof, you know, drops over time, but the
right
liquid was still clear.
Really?
So the cork immediately just dissolved into nothing. But I did find, I do have a great image of it.
Did you taste it?
It was delicious. It's
really?
Absolutely delicious. Yeah, I drank it. I served it to a bunch of people too, and they didn't get sick. So thank God. Here it is.
Yeah.
So it's Hartmann's. It's hyphenated gingerina, scientific compound.
Oh my!
And it's
goodness
a wine glass full. Let me turn the mic here so you can see.
Oh,
there it is.
Legit.
37% is what the proof is on. 37 and
23rd 100s. Spelled diarrhea.
Yeah, back then I don't think was their strong
soup,
but it was delicious. Tastes like Christmas in a glass.
That's great.
Ginger was real spicy.
I mean, wow,
came through pretty strong.
That's cool as hell.
But yeah,
so that's looks like a bottle that somebody would be selling off of the back of their stagecoach. You know,
sure,
like
snake
everything
oil salesman.
Yeah, oh yeah,
yeah. But just the dosages for prescription booze back then is just crazy.
Oh yeah,
I'm not usually the biggest fan of. You know, like walking through the line a little bit, but this has been tremendously fun. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank
I mean,
you.
I just don't want it to come off as a sales pitch. Like, I love, I genuinely have raved about the Old Forester line. Everything you guys are doing, all the decisions you're making have been fantastic.
Yeah.
And the Whiskey Row series is no exception. So, 1910. So, can I give you my initial thoughts?
Sure.
All right. So, when I first... So Statesman came after 1920.
Yep.
I thought Statesman should have come before.
Well, we couldn't. That was a
I know,
flip
it was before
because
the movie.
Of the movie,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, before the movie.
Well,
so.
Actually, we moved Prohibition 1920 up because we were, you know, it should have been after 1910.
Sure, agreed.
Right?
Agreed. And
so,
I think
but we just moved it up because everybody, like the high proof thing was so... and possibly hot, and we had a good one, and plus we were doing a bunch of repeal day promotions and events that it wouldn't it be nice if we gave some folks something,
sure,
like a nice product story behind the
so
event. Yeah.
My initial thought, my initial instinct was like, Statesman should have come before, but the movie didn't come until after, so it was a whole thing. But but when this came out, and originally what I thought is I thought this label was scrapped or something, because the cola had been online for a while, people had been talking about it.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And then,
you guys pay attention,
dude. I'm telling you, this is this is the era of information, and
it's
and there's so much you have to protect as a big brand, but still, what is out there, people are like with their mouth open, paying attention.
Right.
You know, I was like, okay, 1910. Let's see what this is about. This was such a difference, like it almost like a different product altogether. Tell us about 1910 for those who aren't familiar with it.
So I feel like, you know, everyone's like, so what's your favorite, Campbell? Who do you? I was like, it's like children, you know, you can't have a favorite. But actually,
oh, I have a favorite child. I have a favorite child, too.
It switches all the time.
Yeah, I tell people all the time, I have three beautiful, awesome, intelligent girls and a son.
I would say, so this is to me the most different. It's not my, you know, it is, it's certainly got my attention the most these days. A Statesman's right up there with me.
Sure,
too.
Sure.
But so this is another one where back in 1910, we had a fire at the distillery we operate out of today, and they were getting ready to bottle this stuff, and they had to whip it off the bottling line, put it back in barrels, and get it out of the building. Which it was George and his brother Alzi at the time, and I'm sure a number of other, probably those two guys weren't even there.
Sure.
But anyway, it was in their era. They moved these barrels out, you know, they basically, you know, months pass, and they finally get these barrels, and they go to bottle it, and they drink, and it's like, this doesn't even taste like Old Forester. We can't call it Old Forester. We're going to call it Old Fine Whiskey.
Sure.
And so there, I've got a picture of that somewhere on my phone.
Because of the fire, it influenced the aging process.
And plus they put it in a second barrel where it sat for months.
Sure. Just getting that double char, just heavy.
Well,
heavy
I don't know if there was anything different with the barrel back then, but nonetheless, there was something that struck them as it being different enough that they couldn't call it Old Forester.
Sure.
So they put it under a second label. And we've got my cousin Mac has a bunch of these bottles. He loaned us one for the distillery, so we have one on display there. And so this was our kind of look back into history, and we've had some success with double barrels at Brown-Forman recently. And so the difference with ours versus a Woodford's is that ours is lightly toasted but charred within an inch of its life. So we it's the most heavily charred barrel.
Sure. That we this make is also the most heavily smoky.
Yeah.
Like this to me, so that's what was so great about it is my initial instinct was like, well, 1910 should have come first. It's weird that it came second, but then you taste it and you realize it's a completely different product, a completely different path chosen.
Yeah.
I mean, we did an annual gathering. The guy that kind of pioneered the by the barrel thing in the early 2000s for the consumer.
Right.
So for years, restaurants, bars, they had been doing them. But the guy named Randy Blank. Randy Blank talked to Julian Van Winkle into a barrel of Pappy Van Winkle.
Must have been a good talker.
Yeah. Randy. Well, back in 2002, he wanted stuff that still had Stitzel Weller in it, so he opted for a Lot B, bought the whole barrel.
Wow.
And then you got Doug, and you know, it just kind of grew from the most iconic barrels you think of in the collecting world. All originally started with this online group, straightbourbon.com. So, anyways, we got together and he pulled out a Willett 17-year that was originally distilled at Brown-Forman, but it didn't quite taste. It was like that off-profile experiment. And so they sold it to whoever they sold it to, a broker, and then got to Willett or whatever the case might be. But it showcases how for so long, everyone had to be safe. We didn't want to. If it's too off profile, a little nervous. Right. I mean, was anybody nervous about 1910? Did they think it was too different than Old Forester, or they thought it was a great?
Not at all. I mean, I think, none of that never cropped. I mean, honestly, you wanted it to be different enough because we know how different double barrels should taste. So the main thing was like, you know, you want to make sure you don't get impatient and pull it out of the second barrel like it's 6 months.
Sure.
You know, you got to let it sit there until it's good and different. And this has, it's I think a 9-month second barrel. And then then you proof it down from, I think we go into the second barrel at 100 proof. We proof it down to 93. And so.
I can't imagine what this would be at full blown cast strength. It'd be crazy.
Well, but isn't that a good idea?
Yeah.
Somebody should do that.
I don't know that as it is right now, it tastes older. It tastes like the double barrel influence is crazy.
Right.
I can't even imagine what it would taste like at 115.
Yeah, you wonder though, right? Because like these are blended, bunch of barrels. And so there's some art to that. And that in itself can bring around some fullness and character. And you're right. Sometimes maybe as a single barrel version of something, it's just like you're setting yourself up for something that's just going to let you down. I don't know. I haven't tried one that's, on its own. But I do want, that's actually, I wouldn't mind kind of digging into that a little
bit. Reminds me, before we get to our next one, I know we've got a few minutes left. I tell you what, why don't we do this? While we are pouring the next one, and I'm going to actually finish this one. I don't want to dump it. This is so, I really, truly love the 1910. I think it's a tremendous offering.
Thanks.
But while I'm pouring the 1920, which I think is still one of the best. So everyone's path in life is like, I start off drinking Jack and Coke or some sort of,
Right.
Like an old fashioned, or then you start drinking with maybe an ice cube.
Yeah.
Then you start drinking with a little bit of water, a couple drops. Then you move to straight. Then you move up in proof. It's like this path of your bourbon journey. This bottle is such a crown jewel in your portfolio. The Old Forester Prohibition is just so good. While I'm pouring, and answer what you can.
Okay.
But you guys did a charity pick of this, a single barrel charity pick by a bunch of master distillers.
Oh, that was good fun.
It sounded like great fun.
Yeah. And
when can we expect a...
A single barrel 1920?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I don't...
You don't know. That's okay.
They don't let me, like, this is one of the... Because I want to, I'm a pleaser, you know, I want to make... Yeah, we'll do that. And so... I get myself in trouble, but it's certainly all these, you know, we've had various ideas on all of these things. You know, I think we're even still just scratching at the surface a little bit on some of these iterations and you can do some fun things.
I would say that I think, you guys are making consistently fantastic decisions, and it sounds like Jackie has had a hand in ensuring the success.
Yep, Chris, everybody.
I would love to see, this is what I would love to see.
Yep.
As a bourbon fan, take a note, write it down. I would love to see the 115 added to the, because here's the thing.
Okay.
As a whiskey club or as a store, I would want to hit the trifecta. I would want the standard single barrel. I'd want the 115 pick, and I'd want...
Okay, so you're saying you go for three single barrels.
I would love it all, right? So the genius idea of sales is that why sell it by the bars? The genius idea behind bars is they're selling it by the glass, but they're selling it by so many people so fast. The genius idea for stores, we're selling it by the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Distilleries have caught up and thought, why don't we sell it by the barrel,
right?
So you're selling it by the case. As a consumer, would want the standard Old Forester single barrel program. I would love a 115 single barrel program.
Yep.
And, of course, I don't know how limited this new one that Jackie announced is, but it looks the cask strength.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the cask strength, the blue label. I would want the trifecta.
Yeah.
To see it at different stages. There's a distillery in Denison called Iron Root Republic. I don't know where this idea came from, but they had an idea, and it's something that would be too much of a headache for the bigger guys, but their idea was to sell half the barrel, bottle half the barrel, then wait 6 months and bottle the other half so people could taste
the difference.
The same liquid
that
just had six more months aging.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I'm thinking I would rather have more options of single barrel offering programs so that people – I mean, us personally, this past year – I know we're running out of time. I bought a standard proof Jack Daniel's barrel and two barrel proof barrels and a rye barrel.
Wow!
So when that next one comes out, if Brown-Forman does a barrel proof rye, I want all four.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So talk to us about the 1920. I know we're running out of time. And then
I mean, that's basically the Prohibition style. So this would have been kind of the barrel proof, I think, of that era, if you're able to get your hands on one. This has been the most highly reviewed of the Whiskey Row products, probably the most well-known. It's certainly, I mean, it's the one that's put this on the map. And so, it's delicious. It's very smooth for 115 proof. I think it's just it's the best complexities of Old Forester kind of in that edition.
Sure.
I'd say.
Sure. I don't think I'm curious if when something goes as well as 1910 has gone or as 1920 has gone, and when things go this well, how it influences future ideas. I'm curious.
Well, I think you've already struck on it, right? Like there's, you know, we look at proof a little bit more with interest. You know, I think this idea of allowing people to experiment on their own is a real thing. And so you'll tend to see more higher proof offerings for a period of time. I think, breaking down the complexities of blended products through single barrel offerings is a fun way for people to explore a brand. And so, you know, you've touched on that, and doing that with some single barrels is something that I think is of interest. And that's why we're doing the unfiltered and the barrel proof version. We've had a 90 proof. We'll have 100 proof now. So it's just, again, like trying to listen intently on what people are looking for and what's motivating them about the category and about Old Forester in particular, and seeing if we can do a version of that we can do well and make it available, and hopefully it's something that people will warm to. And we've been very lucky with the Whiskey Row, and so that's given us some confidence, I think, to play around. Now we got this distillery, and what can we do out of there? And so I think we'll continue to kind of have fun with the trademark, and stay on around the traditions of the brand and the traditions of the category.
Last question before we go. When will we see to market barrels of juice from the Louisville? From what I understand, nothing's been released yet.
Right. No, it's only been in there a couple of years.
2015?
Yeah, the oldest barrel that's been produced there is just over, a little over, almost coming on 2 years now. And so it's not going to be for, I'd say, at least another 4 years. I think we want that to really rest. I think the conditions in which those barrels are sitting are different from what they sit in Shively, where these are not heat-cycled warehouses. This is a constant temperature, and it's an accommodating temperature, which is unlike what you would find in Shively, where, you know, it can be very, very cold or very, very warm, and we can manipulate that. We can't do that here. So, there's some other things that are going to allow us to play around with the product that's in those barrels. And so, you know, right now we're really pleased where it is, but it's so early. I tasted it about 4 months ago, and, you know, I'll get a chance to sit down with those folks again and taste it in probably another 6 or 7 months and see how it's done. But we're in no rush, really. Until it's ready, we'll just sit on it. When it's ready, it's ready. Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, Mr. Campbell Brown, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah,
it was an absolute pleasure.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And we'll see you next time, guys. Cheers.
Salud.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.